Mexican Revenue Services for 2008/9, as required by the Public Finance Management Act. I'm also pleased, Chairperson, as you have indicated, to formally introduce to you the brand new commissioner of SARS, Mr. Oba Mahashule, who is going to, who is actually leading the SARS team. But also, let me congratulate one of the committee members for a progressive step she has taken in life, even though we were not invited. She used to be called Ndumukayise Sibhiza. She is now Mrs. Sapeta. Congratulations, Ndumukayise. I complain about not being invited because those that know me, I'm very good at eating meat. Chairperson, the work of SARS over the last 13 years and its ability to collect revenue that is due has allowed us to raise the revenue that was required to meet the budgetary needs of our government. And as government, we have been able to fund the development agenda of the state. We've been able to reduce our deficit and service our debt, thereby allowing future generations to benefit from the prudent fiscal management during the good times. Today, Chairperson, without depressing you, I think it is proper that we draw to the attention of the committee, though we know that people know that, that we are experiencing difficult times. The challenge of revenue collection and the finding of the country's budgets are in stress across the world, as the international economy continues to contract. The global financial crisis of 2008 and continuing into this year severely impacted countries worldwide. Starting with the subprime loan crisis in the U.S., it spread rapidly into advanced economies, dragging down the rest of the world into the worst economic recession since the Great Depression. Worldwide rising share prices and short-term growth forecasts, primarily based on output that stopped shrinking, provide comfort for those commentators willing the world towards recovery. While these are encouraging signs, many of the sources of growth are tenuous and tentative. Worldwide unemployment is still rising, much manufacturing capacity remains idle, and rebuilding of inventory cannot boost output for long. Household debt remains high and banks need to bolster their capital. This would then suggest that even after recovery, consumer spending will remain subdued and the cost of capital, although declining now, is set to increase. In the main, spending is driven by government stimulus packages. As in the rest of the world, the South African Revenue Services is experiencing substantial shortfalls in the revenue collections due to the ravages of the global financial crisis. The drop in tax revenue will place a great deal of pressure on the expenditure budget and development ambitions of our government. The minister will be talking to this when he tables the medium-term budget policy statement on the 27th. Following many years of revenue realization above inflation growth, declining revenue could not have come at a worse time for us in South Africa, a time when we are faced with severe social delivery as well as sustainability challenges. Similarly, revenue agencies across the world are showing great strain in meeting revenue targets against estimates. To give you a taste, Chairperson and members, in Australia, tax revenue decreased by 11.6% just between December 2008 and March 2009. In the U.S., budget receipts for the first 9 months declined by 20% year on year. And in Brazil, tax collections in June this year fell by 7.51% compared with the same month a year ago. Revenue in the first quarter of 2009 fell 7.2% in real terms. Mr. Chairman, it is within this context of an economic crisis and falling prospects of revenue collections that we put before this committee the report on the annual performance of SARS today. SARS came within less than a percentage of its revenue target last year, and for this performance, Chair, I would want to say that given the circumstances, the revenue services did a good job. And now, Chair, having painted this picture, which only looks at the current situation as we speak, we would know that that does not necessarily talk to the period under review of the annual report, even though part of it during the last quarter of 2008 was affected. But I just want to indicate that it would be good for the committee to be with us on this matter as we go forward. with your permission, then, Mr. With your permission, Chairperson, let me invite the Commissioner of SARS to vet the highlights of the annual report of 2008-9. Thank you.
Thank you very much, the Honorable Deputy Minister, the chairpersons of the Standing Committee on Finance and the Select Committee on Finance. Thank you very much for inviting us to present the South African Revenue Service annual report for the fiscal year 2008 and 2009. Chair, if you could indulge me to allow me to just introduce the team. As the Minister has said, as a fresh and new commissioner, the team has not changed, Chairperson. And I will ask the members that are accompanying us to raise their hands as I call their name so that the members can be able to identify them. On my left, Chairperson, I've got Mr. Jim Ravele, who is the Chief Officer for Customs and Border Control. And then I've got Mr. Ivan Dillon, who is the Deputy Commissioner and also Chief Officer for Enforcement and Risk Compliance. And then I've got Mr. Logan Roth, the Group Executive of Reputation and Management at MABEC. And then Mr. Ramis Beatrix Kutze, the Chief Financial Officer for the South African Revenue Service. And then I've got Ms. Shana Fanayota, the Acting Group Executive for Human Resources. Then I've got Ms. Fidel Jacobs, the Group Executive for Contact Centers. And then Mr. Kusino, the veteran in SARS, the Chief of Legal and Policy. And then Mr. Natalia Mabetwa, the Group Executive for Taxpayer Services. This is the man who all taxpayers complain to. And then we have with us Mr. Andrew Fisher, the Group Executive for Segmentation and Research. And then we've got the only doctor in the house today, Dr. Randall Carolison, the Group Executive for Revenue Analysis. And then we have Mr. Edward Kiesvetter, who's on my left here, is also the Deputy Commissioner and the Chief Officer responsible for Strategic Services. I've got Mr. Benevol, who's the Chief Officer responsible for Technology and Modernization. And then I have Mr. Adrian Lakin, who's sitting at the back there, is our Dr. Goebbels. And then I've got Mr. Marco Granelli, who's the Executive responsible for Reputation Management. And then we also have our parliamentary representative, Ms. Cindy August, who is driving the presentation on my right. Thank you very much for your indulgence, Chairperson. Chairperson, we take our responsibility for accountability to Parliament very seriously, and we are very pleased. Oh, sorry, I also forgot two other people that they didn't have their name here. It's Joseph Rock, who is the group executive responsible for Large Business Center, and of course, the PM Balase, who I don't know how I forgot, because her presence is very, you know, conspicuous. The PM responsible, ladies and gentlemen, honorable members, for is the group executive responsible for integrity and ethics. Thank you very much.
Maybe before Commissioner, just to say to all of you that you are free to take off your jacket. I know you, it's very, very hot where you're sitting.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Is this a sign that things are going to get hot? And while the Commissioner is taking off his jacket, because he can't take the heat, let me indicate that, Commissioner, you were saying that he's the only doctor amongst your delegation, because the committee has got quite a number of doctors.
Yes. Indicated already. At the time, most of the relevant agencies around the world are grappling with significant lower revenue inflows in an extremely contracted international economy. In South Africa, honorable members, the trends are similar, and SARS has not been able to escape the negative impact on revenue. The minister, as the deputy minister has said, will elaborate next week Tuesday much more in detail in terms of what the impact of the global economy has been on our revenue take. Mr. Chair, you also know that not all taxpayers are yet compliant. And despite all the risks presented to us by the economic downturn, it is our task, honorable members, at SARS, to optimize our ability to collect whatever revenue is due to the fiscus. This year, we will be challenged to perform beyond our ability in order to meet the funding requirements of the fiscus. In the year we are reporting in, the 2008-2009, we missed our revenue by a fraction of a percentage. More accurately, we missed our revenue last year by 0.4%. It was, and still remains, we believe, a very extraordinary performance. The efforts that we at SARS employed towards the end of the financial year, when the ravages of the downturn was starting to manifest itself, are actually the issues that have helped us, we believe, to reduce the shortfall against our printed target for 2008-2009 to only about 0.4%. While we may not have met the target, honorable members, we managed to grow our revenue year on year. Our revenue from 2007-2008 year grew by 9.1% compared to the year that we are reporting on. And if we compare that with other major economies around the world that we benchmark ourselves against in different circumstances, the U.S. and Australia, specifically the U.S., in the same fiscal year, 2008-2009, reported a contraction of 14.5%. And Australia reported a contraction of 2.1% in the same period. So, Mr. Chair, with those highlights of revenue, and I will not repeat what the Deputy Minister said in terms of the outlook for this year, which our Minister would articulate next week Tuesday. If you could allow me to take you through the highlights of our report, which was tabled earlier to the committees. Mr. Chair, our mandate, as encapsulated in the SARS Act of 1997, mandates us to collect all revenue that is due, ensure the efficient and effective collection of revenue, ensure the efficient and effective control over movement of goods and manufacturing of goods. We also are mandated to advise, if the ministers take our advice, Chair, the ministers of finance and trade. So that's our mandate. And then at the bottom of every slide you will see, for those that you have the reference, we have tried to make the reference so that the honorable members can follow it from the annual report. We reference the pages that are relevant to that slide on the annual report. And then, as I have said, Chairperson, the economic conditions that prevailed during that fiscal year that has passed were not that great. They started to deteriorate towards the last quarter of the fiscal year. Real GDP growth declined steeply by from 5% in quarter one in 2008-2009 to -6.4% in quarter four. Similarly, domestic demand declined from a positive demand to a negative demand in the same period. And there were some few key trends that are worth noting, Chairperson, particularly around manufacturing, which declined by 14.3% in 2008-2009 fiscal year. And then mining, and then we have also seen mining being followed by severe job losses in the last quarter of last year. Mining declined from 19.2% to -32.8%. So it's a big swing. It is during the time when we saw an acute slump in the commodity prices. And then the tertiary sector declined from 1.6% to -0.5%. Trade volumes declined also. Exporters declined by 4% in the reporting year, and then imports declined by -5%. And I'm sure you have seen in the balance of trade that this decline for this year has actually been even far more severe than anticipated. We collected 625.1 billion last year, which was 2.6 billion against the printed estimate, short of the printed estimate. As you can see, in fact, Mr. Chairperson, we talk seriously big numbers. A fraction of a percentage represents 2.6 billion. The key text types performance for last year, corporate income tax, which attributes for about 167.2 billion, is around 37%, I think, of our revenue, accounted for, what was 3.7 billion above the estimate. CTC, the secondary tax on companies, 20 billion collected last year, which was 0.02 billion above estimate. Personal income tax, Mr. Chairperson, was below our printed estimate by 3.8 billion, 196.1 billion. Value added tax, 154.3 billion, 0.6 billion below our estimate, and customs duty, 22.8 billion, Mr. Chair, which was 1 billion below our estimate. And then what happened to our tax register during the fiscal year under which we are reporting? We had a change in understanding, in the approach of that we took in understanding our tax register. And this approach, Mr. Chair, was driven by, you know, the benefits that we started to reap from modernization. And we started to understand the numbers around the number of taxpayers and tax types much more better. So the numbers that we are reporting on are, you know, taking into consideration the new approach that we have adopted in understanding our register. For individual taxpayers, our register grew by 6.5%. If you remember, the previous year, the register grew by around 12%. So we continue to see our register growing, which is a good sign when it comes to administrative compliance. That is, the number of people that are filing on time and registering for tax are increasing. We're seeing an increase in trust, which is an expected trend. As people simplify their tax affairs, we expect trust and the benefits of trust as they disappear to see a decrease in the number of trusts that get registered. VAT decreased by 1%, and that 1% registration decrease was simply because of the rules, the new rules that we applied when it comes to registering for VAT and deregistering of many other VAT vendors that were in the first place not supposed to have been registered. And then we have quite positively seen an increase in the growth of the PSEM register. If you remember, Mr. Chair, PSEM represents about 95% of our personal income tax, which is a lead indicator when it comes to saying we're jobs created in our country for the particular fiscal year. And you see that there's been an increase of around 3.8% in the year under report. And then the company income tax, Mr. Chair, increased by 3% year on year, which also shows that there was a positive growth which started to dissipate towards the end of the financial year last year. And then, Mr. Chair, let me please now move to reporting on the objectives and the performance against the strategic plan that we had last year, which we tabled in Parliament in June 2008. One of the objectives that we have is to improve trade administration and border security. It remains our priority. What we did, Mr. Chair, we strengthened trade facilitation and border security through use of risk management tools such as risk profiling, detector document. I'm sure many of the members that go through our borders have seen our dock unit. In the US, they call it the canine unit. We have offered scanners, accredited traders faster and cheaper in order for them to get their goods into the global market. From an enforcement point of view, to detain illicit trade, Mr. Chairman, there were almost 8,000 anti-smuggling seizures that included 731 counterfeit goods that were seized to the value of 379 million. 2,824 contraband and counterfeit cigarettes, almost 1,400 tons of cigarettes, of illegal cigarettes that were seized to a value of 216 million. We had 87 cocaine seizures valued at 328 million. And we also seized cash in all different denominations valued at a staggering 3.3 billion rand. So from border security and border control point of view, Chairperson, those were the highlights. And then for key service targets, how have we performed against the targets that were set, Mr. Chair? We have one measurement of income tax return processed within 34 days. This target was exceeded by 9%, obviously due to the electronic channel, increase of electronic channel. Income tax returns processed within 90 days, we exceeded our performance by 8%. And then the income tax refunds processed within 30 days, 94% were released within the first 5 days. And in VAT processing within 21 days, 81% of all refunds were processed within 21 days. And then, if you remember, Chairperson, last year when the Minister of Finance reported in his budget speech, he mentioned the issues and challenges that we had around servicing SARS. And then last year, Mr. Chairperson, we improved our service to a certain extent. Taxpayers visiting our branches experienced high levels of first-time query resolution at 96.3%, with an average of around 10 minutes of service time, which is pretty impressive compared to where we come from. And then we've also seen a lot of feed working through our offices. People that came through our offices, our different offices, in 2008 filing season increased by almost 50%, from 718,000 to 1.1 million this year. The total number of queries handled increased by 20%. And then we've seen a significant improvement in the use of the electronic channels. And in the next slide, I would demonstrate that. And then outreach and education, we also had a lot of touch experiences. 960 points of service were there, and no permanent branch offices. 4,464 activities of outreach were conducted, and 20,000 people attended these workshops. And then just a second, Mr. Chair, on the improvement that we have experienced on the call center side, as it was one of our challenges last year. Our pain points, it was not all smooth sailing, Mr. Chair. Taxpayers continued to experience an engaged signal. There were high call abandonment rate last year. And e-filing volume, call volumes increased because of the switch that we encouraged to e-filing. And this year we have had some really tremendous improvement this year, which we'll report when our time comes. But we've seen a lot of the pain points being mitigated. Okay. Despite all this, Mr. Chairman, we answered 1.4 million more calls. We answer about 5.7 million calls a year. So of that 5.7 million, there were an extra 1.4 million calls that we answered compared to the previous year. And in those, you know, with those staggering numbers of increases, we still managed to answer within 20 seconds. increase the calls that you answer within 20 seconds by 5%, and then you decrease the call abandonment rate by about 3%. So we are doing a lot to try and improve the pain points. The pain points, we're increasing income lines from 900 to 3,600. We are launching in this week the call center in Cape Town and Durban, the contact centers in Cape Town and Durban. We've appointed an extra 250 staff for the tax season. We've provided a lot of our agents with e-filing, query resolution training. We've introduced the knowledge tool, and then we've multi-skilled most of our call centers. And then the numbers here on here, Chairperson, are there on slide number 12. Most of them are really chopped and cheese if you compare them. A 40% increase in number of tax returns assessed here on there. We've seen the change in the register, the positive increase in the register. You can see from 2.3 assessed tax returns to 3.2 million tax returns for this year. Tax returns received via e-filing, the second one from the bottom there, it has increased by a staggering 317.13%. So we're seeing a huge swing towards people adopting e-filing. Mr. Chair, let me remind, because it's the first time we present to the new honorable members of the committee, and reflect for a moment on how do we understand our compliance model. Our compliance model, Chair, has got three components, which is service, enforcement, and education. It's a service, it's a compliance model that we have adopted, and it's a practice around all tax revenues, most of the progressive tax revenues around the world. In order to be able to have equity within the tax system, we expect that tax is not a happy purchase. It's a glass purchase. If it's not accompanied by proper service, you will definitely see your compliance taking serious knocks. And for those people that are not complying, you must have an enforcement capability so that you do not discourage those that are already in the net for taking advantage of the lack of enforcement and also switching their behavior. And then for those people that are coming new onto the tax net and they do not understand how the tax system works, one of our component of our compliance model is to offer education and help in terms of compliance. We also have an enforcement strategy, Chairperson, which I just want to spend a few minutes just explaining. We view our enforcement strategy in three different elements, which is coverage, depth, and leverage. In this, coverage means an increased possibility of audit. If taxpayers know that you do not have the ability to audit them or have a possibility that in their life tax, in their tax lifespan, they would not be subjected to an audit, their attitude towards compliance would change. So we always look at increasing our coverage when it comes to possible audit. We also want to improve our depth in terms of our ability to prosecute and take every tax dispute to its finality, investigate, have the capability to pursue non-compliance effectively. If you do not have this capability, improving on our enforcement would probably not be effective. And we also need to have leverage. And on this side, Mr. Chair, we have done, I think, not too badly when we look at the cooperation that we have had to use the state leverage by cooperating with other state entities like the National Prosecuting Authority, the South African Reserve Bank, the financial intelligence center, and so on. So we do use leverage in order to make sure that we speedily bring to justice any other person that is not compliant. Part of our enforcement and our drive in this year under review, Mr. Chair, was increasing the automation of our risk engines so that we can much more accurately have focused and high-yield audits. So our case selection has improved quite significantly through the automation of our risk engines. And then we had focus areas in the year last year, which was on VAT and pay-as-you-earn, and then on the custom side, it was clothing and textile, cash and carry dealers, government tenders, and illicit economies. And in the page, I think it's page 36 in the annual report, you will see some of the steps that we have achieved around those focus areas. And the success rate on the enforcement cases, our audit capacity or coverage was at 1%, almost 1%, 1.94%, which translates into around 72,926 audits, which were both desk and field audits. Our success rate, because of the automated risk engines and our much, much better case selections, was 78% compared to the target that we set ourselves of 70%. And then under investigations, enforcement investigations, Mr. Chair, we took 800, I got the wrong number earlier. It's not 1,400, but 800 tons of illegal tobacco that was taken off the streets. 100,000 counterfeit products were seized, and 41,000 tons of clothing were also seized, illegal clothing. Under governance, Mr. Chair, and administration, in fact, we employ about 15,307 employees, of which 14,751 are permanent, and only about 556 temporary. Our average age is almost like Adrian's age, around 37. Yes. So we have very young and capable people in SAR. The good thing is the average year of service is 10 years, Mr. Chair, and that really gives us a lot of leverage that we have experienced people that can carry this important state institution even further. Our attrition rate is 6.68%. If you compare it with the financial sector, which recruits from us, our attrition rate, their attrition rate, I mean, is around 17.7%. Ours is around only 6.6%. And as you can see, we recruit more people than those that leave through resignation, dismissal, retirement, or death. And our recruitment rate is 8.03%. So, net-net, we are a positively growing organization. In our sick rate, fortunately, ladies and gentlemen, it's way, way below the national average, and we're very proud of it that we are very healthy taxmen. So anybody that takes a chance, you know, you'll find us healthy, you know, to deal with the issues. And then on the equity side, Mr. Chair, we are doing very badly, but we still have challenges on top management, particularly when it comes to African women, and getting them into top management position. SARS is 61% female. So we expect that at the top level, you know, those demographics should start to reflect. If you come, just go to the next slide, Mr. Chen, you will see that we have seen a slight growth in female representation, albeit at the lower level rather than at the top level. Previously, in the portfolio committee that the deputy minister used to chair, Mr. Chair, there was only one member that really was interested in disability. And he drove us, and that's why we take our accountability very seriously. We're very proud to say, in the way, and I wish the honorable member was here, we have doubled our disability rate from 1.47 to 2%. I think 2.4%, I think it's an improvement. So we are showing that we do have people of disability working for us. Now, at the time, we do have values that we take very seriously. And we have not just ended with values like many organizations. We've taken our values and translated them into competencies that we can measure and we can be able to attract our people in. Just to recap our values, Mr. Chairman, around mutual respect and trust, integrity and honesty, courtesy and commitment, and transparency and openness. And the competencies that we have come up with are 11 competencies, and right in the middle of our competencies, and we believe that's actually one of the reasons why we've been able to retain some of our great people that we have, our talented people that we have, and simply because we recruit and you come and earn your place in the South African Revenue Services on the basis that you are committed to our higher purpose and you are a person of unquestionable integrity. Of course, we do get it wrong sometimes, but we're seeing that a serious focus and an uncompromising effort that we are putting on making sure that we drive the message around integrity and higher purpose has actually put us in very enviable places in the industry that we work in. We also drive the competency around transformation, Mr. Chair, developing others, building sustainability, leveraging diversity, and influencing others. And everybody gets compensated, gets paid, gets recruited, gets promoted on the basis of their performance against these competencies. And for everybody, I mean, in SARS, they have what we call the developmental, the personal developmental plans, which are predominantly focused around developing these competencies. Mr. Chair, on the financial highlights side, we are in our 8th year of succession without the qualified audit, and this year is no different. We have an effective and efficient audit committee and human resource committee. Our accounting policy on revenue recognition will be migrating by 2013 from a cash accounting to an accrual accounting standard. We've also increased significantly as part of combating some of the or reducing opportunities for corruption and fraud. We've increased our internal audit capacity. We've almost doubled the number of people in the internal audit, and this has really put us in a good stead in the last financial year. And we've seen this investment in internal audit, where we've seen the AG, the Auditor General, starting to rely quite heavily on the work that our internal audit is doing. And we are at the present moment investigating with the National Treasury the possibility of sharing our internal audit capability within the finance family. On the international side, Chapter 7, we will be coming back to the committee to brief the committee on the establishment of the African Tax Forum. I am the chair of the forum, the steering committee of the forum, and we are launching the ATF, or the African Tax Administration Forum, next month on the 17th to the 19th of November in Kampala, in Uganda. We had a meeting last year in the 20th of November 2008, where 32 African countries came to Pretoria to demand the launch of the African Tax Administration Forum, and then they chose 7 members of the African Tax Administration Fraternity to act as a steering committee towards the establishment of the forum. And I'm very proud as the chair of the forum that we have reached the goal that was set by the Tax Conference, the African Tax Conference last year, for the establishment of a tax forum, which would dovetail quite effectively with the OECD tax forum. So we're pretty chuffed about the fact that we've gone to a stage where we can be proud that we'll have, you know, African domestic resource mobilization done by Africans in our continent, and we'll be launching that, as I said, in Kampala. We have hosted 5 international events last year, Mr. Chair, which included the World Customs Organization's 21st century strategy. We hosted the OECD Regional Forum on Trade Facilitation, and we also hosted CIA's Annual Technical Conference in Johannesburg. And then we've also signed a few bilateral agreements with Australia, Mozambique, Netherlands, Portugal, and so on. And then we also assisted in a lot of other capacity development on policy, study research, and training in our SAS facilities for Africa based on the WCO IFA Regional Training Center. We also, Mr. Chair, signed a banking accord with the South African banks last year, which was the first in the world. Later on, the UK followed and also signed us, and ourselves and the UK have been asked by the OECD to develop a global banking accord for tax administrations in the rest of the world. So we're very proud to say that we are using our South African banking accord to set the standard for global banking accord. We engaged with the profession. And then in slide 25, Mr. Chair, we also drafted a few laws last year. Our success rate in terms of litigation was 69%, and then international treaties, 7 new treaties were signed and protocols, and 6 new customs agreements and MEUs were also signed. And then yesterday, Mr. Chair, we also had a modernization agenda, which we are on horizon 1 in terms of delivery, which was the first 2 years. And then our focus areas for our modernization are in 5 areas, which is service, risk, operations, customs, and support. On service, we want to improve customer service and outreach. Risk, we want to develop an integrated risk management and enforcement system and operation. We want to enhance cooperation and building capabilities and so on. Mr. Chair, I will not go into a detail of explaining each one of those things in case I have exceeded my mandate. And I wish to take this opportunity now, Mr. Chair, to summarize and conclude by saying that we are experiencing some challenges when it comes to continuing to grow the level of the number of compliant tax payers in our country. We have, as you have seen very lately, we have increased, you know, our penalty or revised our penalty regime to make it far more effective as a deterrent. And we are still under pressure, Mr. Chair, this year when it comes to our revenue, and are looking forward to working with you in resolving some of our problems. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner. Quite an informative presentation, starting with the input by the Deputy Minister that gave us the synopsis of the challenges here and globally in terms of the economic performance of our country and the impact of contraction to your ability to maximize revenue collection. I would therefore take this opportunity and ask members to engage with the submission either in the form of questions of clarity and participation at the same time. Honorable George.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you very much, Deputy Minister and Commissioner. I'd like to congratulate SARS. It really is a world-class institution, and it's a role model, I think, for other departments that could follow suit. Obviously, there are areas that always require improvement, and I'm sure we'll see a continuing improvement under the Commissioner, and congratulations on your appointment. It was mentioned that there's been a shortfall in estimated revenue, and I think we can understand that that would obviously happen because of the economic circumstances that we're currently in. But there are steps that SARS can take to maximize revenue. For example, making sure that all of the eligible taxpayers are actually in the tax net and paying their tax, and that non-compliance is minimized. There is clearly leakage in the system, and my question to you is that does SARS have any measurement of what that leakage might be, and what steps is it taking to actually try to resolve that hole in the system? And then during the public hearings on the taxation laws amendments, we had some commentary that our tax laws are too complicated and too complex, etc., and that often there's non-compliance through confusion rather than the desire to tax evade. From the SARS perspective as a tax collector, do you have any experience in having difficulty in applying the laws due to the so-called complexity? And do you have any experience of where instances do arise where compliance is compromised by confusion? And then finally, one of the key ingredients to our economic growth is to encourage saving within our economy, specifically among individuals. And as you know, what happens is if you're an individual and you save, you have to pay interest on your savings in certain instances. And if it's over a certain amount, you need to be registered as a provisional taxpayer. And what does happen is it does put an administrative burden on the saver. So is there anything that SARS can do to actually alleviate this burden on people who like to save? Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Makuvela, followed by Honorable Ntombikayise Sibidla, Deputy Minister, Saphe. I ate the meat, by the way, on your behalf. I was overwhelmed. Honorable Lisa, back after Honorable Sapat.
Thanks, Chairperson. I'm having two questions. First of all, I would like to congratulate the Commissioner. But I'm the Divisional Commissioner for that state. I'm a bigger Commissioner. my question to you is slide number 10. You are saying 916 points of service where there are no permanent branch offices. Seeing this number, is there a possibility that an investigation can be made in order to establish the permanent offices? Because the service there, you find that there's a lot of number there, that number. Okay, at the establishment here, slide number 17, you are really a module department or man office because the age is ranged from 37 going upward. No old people there. I'm saying the sick leave this absent rate 1.78. But we didn't hear much about the A wall, if there is any A wall. Two, also the misconduct part, we didn't hear about it. Can we hear something about the misconduct? Because they cannot be holy. I don't know. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm Chairperson, can I join those who have congratulated the Commissioner in his appointment? I have four or five questions, but I'll ask three for now, and later I will come back. Chairperson, it's difficult to engage with the presentation because both the Deputy Minister and the Commissioner in their inputs, they kept on saying that some of the issues that will be addressed in the MTBPS by the Minister. So I'm not sure whether it will be out of order if we ask questions that will be covered on the 27th. My first question, Chairperson, relates to the border control. Systems. In the past few weeks, I think 2 weeks or 3 weeks ago, most of us saw on television SARS officials raiding shops in Durban in particular. And during that process, they seized a lot of illegal goods. Some they were prepared to be shipped out of the country, and some were goods that came illegally into the country. I just want to check, Chairperson, how is it possible having those systems within SARS for those goods to pass through without being detected? My second question, Chairperson, is around the disposal of the illegal goods. The Commissioner mentioned that they've seized more than 300 goods worth more than 300 million in the entry points. I just want to get a clarity as to how do they dispose of those goods. My other question, Chairperson, is not part of the report, but I think I have an interest on the matter. It was raised after the report was written, the issue of establishing a border management agency. I just want to get how far are the preparations to establish that agency. On page 69, Chairperson, of the report, it is mentioned that the South Africa is hosting an interim structure or secretariat of the African Tax Organization. I just want to check how much does that cost South Africans to host that secretariat. And on page 67, under international programs, there's a mention of the South African, Southern African Customs Union. And in the past few months in this committee, Chairperson, I've had many members and ordinary citizens of this country raising an issue around the SACU formula in relation to the sharing of the revenue that is collected. There's a feeling that we are ripping off South Africans to benefit other countries I just wanted to check if SARS has engaged on the matter and what is the plan moving forward. We were also told that there are countries within the SADC region that are not participating in the SACU. What could be the reasons for those countries not participating in the SACU? Is it beneficial for them not to do so? And what impact does it have on the South and on the SACU itself? Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Liz, you'll be followed by Honorable Luyenge and Honorable Mukuni. In that order.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. The Honorable Dr. George has dealt with some of the macro issues. I'd like to deal with some of the micro issues. With you, Mr. Commissioner. You mentioned that the benefits of trusts are disappearing, and I'd like some clarity on what you meant by that. The question of the deregistration of vendors, VAT vendors, is a vexed one. And the reason I say that to you is that many of the state departments who issue tenders require registration when indeed the VAT Act in itself does not, for various limits perhaps on turnover and so on. And so therefore you get registrations being forced on people who do not want to register, in fact legally do not have to register. My question is what has happened in the discussions with the other state departments, particularly departments such as the Department of Transport, Public Works, and so on, to ensure that they don't require registration when there is no legal requirement for such registration. The question of the huge amount of cash seized, and it follows on the last honourable member's question about how were the goods disposed of. Well, how was the cash disposed of? Did that go into the general revenue, into fiscus, or what happened to the 3-odd billion rand cash that was seized? The slide 9 refers to key performance areas and it says days, certain number of days, but the question really is days from what? What is the trigger date that starts the countdown? Because in many instances your organization is quite good at stopping the countdown by asking for information, and it can be months of queries before the countdown perhaps starts. I'm not sure when this countdown starts, so I'd be interested in that. In terms of the call centres, in my experience, are shocking. They are terrible things, and I'm afraid, to be honest with you, sir, your call centres, both the practitioner centre and the general call centre, are not good. And the reason that we say that is that the people who take your calls, our calls, generally are not able to deal with the queries there and then. And it's then what they call escalated. And that's probably the last one hears of it for some considerable amount of time. And so the question of whether the calls are answered quickly, and sometimes they're not, but generally they are, is not really the measure of the success rate of the call centre. In terms of the ability of your department to deal with taxpayers through means of correspondence, our experience, my personal experience, is that your people use generic letters which actually do not address directly the issue under discussion. They fail to respond to letters. I have a query that goes back some 12 months. I've even had one of your people call on me on it, and yet it's still unresolved. And so the let me just say at this point that the e-filing system is fantastic. I think it's great. So anything that works electronically is fantastic and works very well. But when it comes to letters, it's a nightmare. The increase in the ability to audit is fantastic. Compliance, I think, is one is something that you are targeting, and I think that all of us applaud. However, why do we get a on-site audit for a 21 Rand VAT refund? I fail to understand that the emphasis being placed on such a thing, and perhaps you can give me some explanation. Tongue in cheek, yes, average age of 37, my age is 56, so, but I believe I'm still capable. I think your comment was young and capable, so you don't have to respond to that. So your business is about numbers. If I take the disability percentage of 1.47 and I increase it to 2.4, that's not double, sir. I hope that the rest of your organization, when it does calculations, does it more accurately than that. Mr. Chairman, I think I've dealt with the notes I made as I went through. Thank you very much for your indulgence.
I thought the commissioner said the number almost doubled. Luyange, you'll be followed by Honorable Mkuni.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Let me first start with a rider to the question that was posed by Honorable Sibisa in relation to the sales goods. Maybe I will craft like checking as to whether such goods are regarded as assets or liabilities in the institution. If so, is there any policy in relation to the management of such goods? And the other issue, Chair, is with regard to the sustenance or consistency on the tax-paying concerns. Can there be any indication in relation to the registration and deregistration of state tax-paying concerns? Or is this growth maybe based on new registrations, or there is consistency and an element of new registering tax-paying concerns? Another one is in relation to, because of the professional manner in which this institution is managed, I'm worried of the human resource that is there. Is there any retention strategy or mechanism that is being employed by institution to ensure that there is no poaching in terms of the staff that is there by other institutions, so that they don't see greener pastures elsewhere? The other issue, Chair, is in relation to one of the values under courtesy and commitment. I've not heard as to whether the institution is issuing some bursaries, and also in relation to ensuring that there is capacity that they build by investing in the tertiary institution. Then lastly, is legal related. Is there any level, maybe what is the level of the legal contestations during the enforcement processes? If so, maybe what is the rate? Are there any cases of litigation in relation to that? Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir. My first question, I think, is similar to the previous speaker on litigation. According to your presentation, you have a 69% rate of success in litigation. My question is, if you've got 69% rate of success, at what cost was the litigation, and how much was collected within the 69% success rate? My second question is on compliance. If my memory serves well, one of the strategies of SARS for taxpayers to comply is through education. Now, according to your report, there are roughly 800 summons issued or to be issued. If my information is right. And also, according to your modernization program, you have unearthed 400,000 new taxpayers that were, or potential taxpayers that you are supposed, people are not paying tax but are supposed to pay tax. My question is, out of these 400 and new potential taxpayers and the 800 somewhat plus summons issued, do you think the strategy of education rather than litigation is successful? If not, what is your new strategy or what do you intend doing with these people still dodging tax or still not complying? And my last question is on staff. It shows that you've got a low percentage of turnout. Mostly it's due to death, resignations, dismissals. I just want to find out on the resignations and dismissals. What percentage constitutes dismissals? And under what were the main reasons for dismissals? And secondly, on resignations, what percentage constitutes resignations and what's the main reasons for resignations? Thank you.
Honorable Warren Wolf, and followed by Honorable Gunda, and then Honorable Muntisi, and then Harris.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm partially covered. Just on the cash, I just want to know the cash, is it coming, was it seized when it came into the country or when it left? That's, you know, is there sort of a balance? And secondly, just on the legal issue, I know sometimes you litigate to get a clear principle decision by the courts, and that's a value in that. But if you look at the success rate and you balance the legal cost, tax lawyers are not cheap. If you balance the legal cost to the earnings, roughly, is it possible to give us an indication?
Thank you, Chair. I'm also partly covered by the Honorable Nguni. Just one question now that's left. During this year, there was a strike from the SARS workers. The picture you've painted for us is a very good picture here. I would like to know if those unhappy people are happy.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, just on the border clarification. I just wanted to find out to what extent do the theft of motor vehicles in South Africa, probably through hijacks, into neighboring countries, whether that type of loss is negligible to the insurance company in South Africa. Not to be mentioned here. Probably it is because of improved border control and security, or the rate of recovery. I don't know, but I just wanted to check whether it does not impact on the insurance industry. And then secondly, the outreach and education program of SARS. I was just thinking aloud as to how we can be able to interact with SARS on our constituencies
because we interact with small business, you know, shopkeepers and so on, so that some of these people could be able to benefit from the education program. Thank you.
Eric? Thank you, Chair. On slide 6, where you talk about the categories of tax and the figures for last year's performance, is it normal for personal tax and VAT to lead a decline in personal tax and VAT to lead a decline in corporate tax? I mean, I've read in your annual report it speaks about how corporate tax remained high, but under personal income tax, the decline was linked to lower growth and employment levels. But surely turnovers would first decline, and then workers would be laid off, or less workers would be hired. Can you just explain the leading or lagging there amongst those taxes? Secondly, with regard to that figure next year is going to be really bad. I mean, this annual report doesn't capture, it's really just the leading effect of the recession. To what extent do you believe your tougher stance on non-compliance will mitigate the effect of the shortfall that's coming? As a proportion or percentage, or just a rough estimate? And then what other factors are you implementing to mitigate that shortfall? And then with regard to those that tougher stance on non-compliance, is there a global precedent for making non-compliance a criminal offence, and also requiring banks to raid personal accounts to take the tax? Can you just tell me, or tell the committee rather, about international examples in that regard? And then lastly, my colleague Mr. Gunder's question about the SARS strike. Is there a process, are you attempting to get tax collection regarded as an essential service? Is there a process underway in that regard? If there isn't, should there be? And if there is, what is the status of that? Thank you.
Okay. I think we'll take this as the first round of questions and allow Sam to respond. I don't think just the member of the commissioner. There are issues that will touch on Jim Ravelle's side and then Marito and all those other people, the executives.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thanks to the members for very insightful questions. I hope that we'll be able not to disappoint you with our answers. Starting with the questions that Honourable George asked in terms of whether what are we doing to maximize revenue and what are we doing in terms of stopping the leakage, and what is the tax gap as we are at the present moment. In terms of maximizing revenue, for this year we've got about 24 projects that we have employed over and above the normal flow of revenue that we are expecting. Last year, if you remember, we were not anticipating that we will lose our revenue by a long shot. This year, we are anticipating that there will be a significant shortfall in our revenue. And we have put into place direct mitigating programs to try and redirect some of the capacities that we have to projects that in the normal flow of business as usual, we would probably not have found the time to have done that. And to give an indication of those type of programs, it's you know, the VET project. We have seen a lot of people abusing the VET system. When you're not supposed to be registered, the number for VET registration, the threshold is around 20,000. If you have a turnover of less than 20,000, you don't have to register for VET. What I've seen is people that register for VAT, even if their turnover is less than 20,000, claiming VAT and disappearing and starting another company and then claiming VAT and disappearing. never ever pay output set. So we have gone down and we have cleaned our databases, and we are at a point where we have already been registered a lot of other vendors that in the first place should not have been registered. So let's talk about the project. There are projects in terms of outstanding disputes when it comes to declared income that we have disputes of with other organizations. So we issue what we call Section 19.3 in the LBC, and Jonathan explained a little bit of detail if you want that remember. But those are some of the projects. So we issue this Section 19.3 earlier, so that we resolve any dispute when it comes to undeclared tax. And then we're in a position where we can bring that revenue earlier into the fiscal. We've also increased, as part of our strategy, a number of people that are working on the enforcement side by simply redeploying other people from places that we have automated and we don't need as much manpower as possible in order to make sure that our cover rate goes up, the number of focused audits that we do increase, and the unit actually improves quite significantly. So we are doing a lot of other things on the enforcement side, on the service side, to try and make sure that we pull money that are already in the channel much faster so that we can be able to alleviate the squeeze on our fiscus. And then we have a complex the text that is mentioned, and I ask Quentin to take that from you, Mr. George. And then our question is preparing themselves, and we also answer a question on whether we can have a need for a simplification of savings, yes, through the SAS system. And then the question that Mr. Makubela has, the honorable Makubela has raised, on the 260 permanent branches, not permanent branches that we have, the touch points that we have, as the chair has indicated, we have Mr. Nick Magatra, who will take that one. And then Michelle van der Heerden, our acting HR group executive, will look at the annual and how many people, were absent and those that were fired because of misconduct. And I think that will also answer the question that was asked by Honorable McGuinn on the breakdown of residentials and dismissals. And then the Honorable member, congratulations also. I also like meat. Mr. Ravella will look at all the questions on that thing. And then the BMA, Mr. Ravella, if you can add it one. Yes, well, the BMA is the Deputy President, I'm sorry, the Deputy Minister.
Well,
Mr.
President,
Mr.
Deployment Committee.
The Deputy Minister. We'll take the BMA question and also then look at the same time the questions that Honorable Minister Mzisi asked on the theft of cars and so on. And then we'll leave it there, then we'll take the other half once the members have done. Yeah. So, question?
Sorry, before, I thought you also deal with the unhappy.
Oh, yes. Thank you very much. On the SAS strike, was effectively, although it's for this year, for 2009-2010, on our member, we have indulged you. Because the figure that we are reporting in is 2008-2009. But besides that, the SAS strike was for a week, but effectively for 2 days. Which was a Monday and a Tuesday, where we had absenteeism rate of around 40-50%. Now we were still functional. The biggest impact on it was we had to close Ramat Obama. and divert traffic from Ramakalama to Spur Patnet in the northwest. That was the biggest impact of the strike. We had a few incidences of violence, which was acted very strongly on. In Great Britain, one taxpayer was assaulted by one of our employees, and the police arrested him on the spot. That was the really big, event that took place. We settled at the end of that week, on a Sunday, if I remember. And then we didn't settle at anything higher than the original proposition that we put in front of Labour. So we did move. So we didn't get the IMP, we were always happy, but they needed to, exercise. So, yes, they have to be convinced that they are happy. So we are convinced that we have resolved all the issues. And that, by the way, the first strike in the history of staff. So we took it quite seriously, if you can imagine. We are disappointed that our good record has been broken. But on essential services, one of the reasons why we tried to interdict the union was to say that there are certain areas in SARS, like, for example, the movement of goods and services in our borders, which cannot be held at ransom. And for that reason, we believe that long time ago, not just now, we should have tested the extent of the provision on whether they were willing to accommodate us and declare us an essential service. We have instructed our lawyers to continue and pursue the application, which goes to the committee in the CCMA. It takes a long time for it to be resolved. But we are hoping that not the whole of SARS probably will be declared an essential service, but part of SARS definitely mitigate for them being classified as essential service. Okay, Kosi, if you could...
Maybe before Kosi can come in. I was of the opinion that we should take 5 to 8 minute break, have tea, and when we come back, Kosi will then move on in the rest of the activities. Just as the tea was actually meant for 11 o'clock, it's getting cold. All right, 5 to 10 minutes, and we're back here.
All right. Thank you.
After leaving any penalty that we have. So, that's the best way we can say at the present moment. We are in the right direction. We are looking at starting what we call a national research-based program, which will be audit-based, where we'll choose the sectors and the segments that we've identified. We'll do audit-based research and then arrive at conclusions that we can make based on those segments once we've done the research. And we'll have to do this research every 2 or 3 years so that we can be able to refresh our intelligence as we go about it. But at this point in time, we're not at the position where we can say, definitely, this is the tax gap that we have. But there are few indications around outstanding returns, the level of under-declarations when it comes to income, like we're seeing through our third-party reaching capability that people don't declare, for example, interest that they earn. In their returns. They just declare what is in their IRP files, and then any other thing that is outside the net does not get declared. So now you can pick up those names. You can be able to go back and ask for revised assessments, revised returns, and I'm able to pursue them in a more firmer and focused way. So, question, if you could take your questions, and then Chairman, I will also ask the members of my delegations to take all the questions from all the members that pertain to their level of responsibility. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chair. I'll start with the question around the complexity of the tax laws. There's always an ongoing debate as far as the complexity of the laws are concerned, not just locally in South Africa, but it's an international issue. I think we would all like to see, you know, less complex laws and much more stability as far as the tax system is concerned. But unfortunately, you know, we live in a world where there's always new developments as far as the world is concerned. And over the last 10 years, you know, we had to make some big changes and adjustments, I mean, to our tax system. Because we had fallen behind in certain areas, you know, as far as really maintaining a proper, comprehensive tax system in place. And I'm sure you will remember some of the two big adjustments that we made with the introduction of CGT and also the residence basis of taxation. Now, those were the big changes that we made early in the 2000, around about 2001. And as with any new piece of legislation around a new tax product, etc., you never get it right completely at the beginning. So we had to do some refinements, you know, over the years that followed 2001. But also, you know, as I say, apart from those sort of things to try and get our tax system in line with the rest of the world, even locally there are always new developments that require, you know, changes to our laws. Just take, for example, the new Companies Act, you know, that are going to be introduced next year. It's going to require some major, you know, changes to the Income Tax Act as well, because we've got to align some of these systems. So apart from new laws that comes in that we need to do some consequential amendments to, there are also, and especially in the financial services sector, there are always new products that are coming online that we otherwise, if we don't keep pace with some of these things, we are going to fall behind and it's going to develop huge lacunas in our legislation. You know, there are, from time to time, there are new incentives that are being introduced into the legislation. Now, sometimes the concept behind the incentive is easy, but there are always the opportunities for people to exploit, you know, some incentives. And that's normally the part that makes some of the laws so complex, to try and think through what are the opportunities that people can see in exploiting some of the legislation, and you've got to close all those sort of gaps, and that contributes to making the legislation more lengthy and more complex. But we are, together with the Treasury, now exploring the option that we need to pull back a little bit and stabilize things. You will remember we normally had two bills, you know, that we pass every year. There were even some years that we passed three bills. That we are exploring the opportunity of only passing perhaps one bill every year. And then if we can only get one bill through, it'll also allow us some more time, you know, to do better planning for the work of the following year. Whether it contributes to confusion in the tax system, I don't really think so in general. There might have been a few isolated instances. I think there were specifically, you know, where you had to refine a specific piece of legislation over a few times, and, you know, there are different implementation dates that causes, sometimes, you know, problems. But I don't think, in general confusion, I don't think so. We from our side are also trying to provide, you know, more clarity, you know, as far as the tax laws are concerned, especially new provisions that are coming in. I'm sure you will see
we are now on an annual basis, you know, producing at least 10 to 15 new interpretation notes on a specific piece of legislation, guides perhaps a product, etc. But I think it's a debate that will always be with us. Internationally compared, I think our tax system is still much more simpler. If you look at in countries like the UK, the Australia, even after their tax rewrite systems, they say they thought they would have made things simpler, but I don't think they to some extent they admit that they haven't really achieved, you know, a much easier tax system in the end. As far as the provisional tax and savings is concerned, I don't think provisional tax in general is really a deterrent or making it more difficult for people to save. Or remember, the whole object of the provisional tax system, provisional tax is not a separate tax. It's just a method of collecting your income tax. And to, for example, make the sort of the payment of the tax to, from a timing point of view, to bring it much closer to the accrual of the income in the first instance. But then also, secondly, to give the taxpayer an opportunity to start making the payments over time. Otherwise, if you get the huge bill just on assessment, you know, it makes it very difficult then to pay the tax, you know, in one go. We have over time, you know, also in the Minister of Finance, over the previous Minister of Finance, over time was very sympathetic as far as this is concerned, especially as far as older people. And over the last 10 years, you know, he did a number of things, you know, the tax thresholds, you know, for both people under 65 and the over 65 have been adjusted, you know, regularly. Even you now, when a person over 65, the threshold is about just over 84,000. Before, below that, you don't pay any tax. Then on top of that, he consistently increased the exemption for interest over the last 10 years, about the sort of inflation growth. If you look, 10 years ago, I think that interest exemption was around about 1,000 or 2,000 rand. Now, for over 65, it's about 30,000. And then there are also other additional sort of exemption levels in the fourth schedule around provisional tax. But we are looking at other options and possibilities as far as this is concerned. We are exploring, you know, what other countries are doing, what are the latest developments in this regard. Unfortunately, at this stage, it will be very premature for me to say what this is, but we are investigating other options and so on, and when the right time comes, the minister will make the necessary announcements as far as that is concerned. I think there was also a question around trust and what we have done over the last few years to make or the changes that we, from a tax point of view, we've made as far as trusts are concerned. I think it's a well-known fact that trusts have been used as a tool, you know, as far as tax avoidance is concerned. One example, for example, was in the transfer duty area, that many people, you know, when they buy a house, they would have bought the house in a trust. Okay, at the time that you buy the house into the trust, there is transfer duty, but the benefit that you then get is the subsequent sales thereof. All you then do, you just change the beneficiaries in the trust, and there was no transfer duty paid on it, and there was also no stamp duty paid on it. We put a stop to that, and we've subjected where there is just a change in beneficiaries in the trust, and that also was deemed to be a disposal for transfer duty purposes. From an income tax point of view, it was also used as a tool to minimize income tax. Remember, we have a progressive income tax system as far as personal income tax is concerned. So the higher your income is, the higher your rate is. So what people would do, they would then start a business, you know, in a trust, and then below the trust, they would form multiple layers of trust, and they will filter the income down from the top trust into all the trust below and leave a little bit of income in all of them, and in that way you split your income and you get the benefit of the progressive rates in the tax system. We also put a stop to that by saying that all trusts except certain kinds of special trusts, there's just a single rate of 40% payable as far as that is concerned, so you can't access the progressive rate system for each of these trusts. And well, there are other examples as well, but I think some of that, you know, may trust, I think, less attractive, or the formation of trust less attractive from a tax point of view. I think there was also a question around legal, the processes, the costs, and some benefits around it. Yes, it is so that, you know, once there's been an audit or an investigation and it ultimately a dispute, you know, arises as far as that is concerned, the laws does make, the tax laws does make provision for a specific process or how to resolve these disputes. If a taxpayer is not happy with an assessment that you get, you can object to the assessment. SARS must then properly evaluate it. If the assessment is disallowed, you appeal. From there, it can go into an alternative dispute resolution process. If we can't resolve it there, it goes to the ultimately to the courts. Now, disputes generally, I think every year on an annual basis, we get anything between, I think, about 10 to 15,000 objections, you know, as far as assessments are concerned. The vast majority of these objections are dealt with before they reach the sort of appeal stage. I think when you get to the appeal stage, you will get, say, you will filter it down to a much smaller number. So there is a definite process as far as that is concerned. Legal costs, external legal costs varies on an annual basis, say around between, say, 50 to 60 million rand. That's only the external legal costs. We have got some of our internal legal counsel as well that resolve some of the disputes. Benefits, yes, it is worthwhile spending that money. There's almost on a rolling basis you will find that there are disputes trapped in the dispute process where the tax involved could vary between anything from about 3 to 5 billion rand, and it's worthwhile, you know, challenging those matters. There's also a lot of abuse that you also, and future abuse that you stop as far as that is concerned. It's also important to get the right principles from the courts ultimately, and that contributes to certainty as far as the tax matters are concerned. There was also a last question, maybe I should been about trying to deal with that one, but maybe some of the others must also come in, on registration as far as that is concerned. Yes, the law does specify certain limits, you know, from a VAT point of view. Currently, if a business's turnover is below 50,000, you cannot actually access the VAT system. And up to a million rand, between 50 and a million rand, is voluntary for the person to come into the VAT system. How it perhaps links with the procurement system. If you're not in the tax system and you've opted out from a voluntary point and you fall below those thresholds, it should not really affect the obtaining of a tax clearance certificate if all the other taxes that you are liable for are up to date. I think that's as far as I can take it at this stage, yeah?
Thank you very much. I'll ask the Deputy Minister to deal with the Border Management Agency development. Thank you, sir.
Can I just indicate, Deputy Minister and your team, that we have almost 20 to 15 minutes left, and we still have got another
very serious presentation to take. So I appeal that as your team responds, they should try to respond within the next 15 minutes on all the issues.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think this just shows that perhaps we needed more time to deal with this. We should have dedicated a day to this one and another day to play them. But that's my wish also, Chair. Not that I say we must do that. Chair, a quick one on the Border Management Agency. The Honourable Member did indicate that the process falls a little outside of the reporting period, but I must indicate that the matter is now being dealt with by an interministerial committee of all the ministers that are involved. A lot of work has been done. It is work in progress, but it is now at a level where the interministerial committee is looking at it, because as you understand that the issue of border control is not only about customs, but it's also about law enforcement, entry, intelligence issues. So that interministerial committee is made up of all the ministers that are affected. It will be concluded in due course, and as soon as it is concluded, the agency becomes critical, because it also would strengthen the efficiency of border control. As one of your questions directly points out to the fact that when we raided East Durban, staff was already in the country, precisely because perhaps of the lack of coordination between the agencies and the government departments that are controlling the border movements. The other question was about the SACU revenue sharing formula. This matter also is a matter that is receiving our attention, but this process has further been complicated by a number of other processes that are in place. One being that of regional integration, and the other one being that of the interim economic partnership agreement that some of the countries have also been affected by. So it's a matter that South Africa views quite seriously, but this is a matter that is being handled in a very cautious manner, that it does not also unnecessarily cause unnecessary tensions between our SADC countries. But it's a matter that is receiving attention, and as you would know, it particularly because of the current economic crisis also, it has taken quite a knock, and there are countries that whose budgets entirely rely on these SACU receipts, and it should be handled in a manner that also does not unnecessarily put those countries at a disadvantage. But it's receiving our attention. Thank you.
Thank you, Chen. Gilavella will deal with all the border questions, including what happens to illegally seized goods, including cash. And then Logan will come in to give the numbers on what the cost of the steering committee is on HF, and then the breakdown in terms of resignation, dismissals, and absenteeism. I'll ask Shani to give those numbers, including also the retention strategy and the graduate scheme, and so on. Very short.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, Honourable Chair. Members, the question, the first question was about what happens to goods that have been seized. If it is counterfeit goods, we destroy. When we reasonably suspect that goods are counterfeit, we intercept them and invite the licensed brand holders. So if they are Nike T-shirts and running shoes, we will invite Nike SA to come and draw a sample and check if they are really counterfeit. And then once they come back with confirmation that they are counterfeit, we move them to a warehouse where they are kept, and we will jointly destroy them with industry, with brand holders. If it's fraudulent imports, like undervalued goods, wrong tariff has been used, what we normally do with those, after we have exhausted all internal remedies, like the 90-day period to produce authentic documents, we would have an auction and sell them to an exporter. So those goods are not going to be sold in South Africa. They are sold to an exporter who will go and sell those clothes in the Northern Hemisphere, that is north of the equator. So the other category is second-hand clothing. Second-hand clothing is normally imported into the country by faith-based organizations, like religious NGOs who want to help the destitute in South Africa. As a matter, by law, we are not allowed to accept second-hand clothing into the country. You can only do it under certain circumstances. So if they are meant for disaster relief, you accept them. But before we even release the goods to the NGO, there's a process of verifying whether that NGO exists, interviewing people. After we do that, then a submission gets written by the commissioner to the DG Treasury and DG DTI, who will then issue permission for the clothing to be given to the NGO. And the other thing that we also do as a way of disposal, we donate some of these clothes for disaster relief. During the last year's attacks on foreign nationals in places like Cape Town, Johannesburg, and other places, we gave clothing to those people whose houses were destroyed and burned down. We also do it in the region. When there were floods in Mozambique, we gave clothing. And when people, there are floods in the Western Cape during the rainy season, we have given clothing and blankets. That's how we dispose of those goods. On cash that we seize, I think it is important to mention that the cash that we detain, we do it on behalf of the South African Reserve Bank, because they don't have people at the border. So we detain the cash on reasonable suspicion that there's been contravention of the Exchange Controls Act. So there are limits on what amount of cash you need to be carrying coming into South Africa and leaving South Africa. So once you have exceeded that limit, we'll need some proof that this money came from a bank. You did exchange controls, and this is proof from the bank. Otherwise, we'll assume that you engaged in money laundering. So what we'll do is we detain the money, and we hand it over to the Reserve Bank. The arrangement currently is that we've got a drop box and a book where we register how much money has been seized. We drop it into a box. The Reserve Bank has got a key to that box. They go, they unlock, they take the cash, they take it away. So people that are taking the money into the country or taking it out have got recourse. They go to the Reserve Bank and show them proof that the money wasn't being illegally transported. Then the Reserve Bank will make a call. They either refund them or still keep the money. We don't keep it as a revenue service. The other question was around whether goods that we seize are assets or liabilities. I think the response will be they are both assets and liabilities. With counterfeit goods, they are not assets, they are liabilities. The cost of destruction is on us. But they are goods that have been irregularly imported, that if we seize, we sell at an auction, and to cover our own costs and also bring some money to the fiscal. I think we are both in that regard. The last question, Chair, was around whether the cash that we seize is outgoing or incoming. Unfortunately, we haven't really disaggregated, but you get this cash from people coming into the country or leaving the country. We can provide the disaggregated data in writing to the committees. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Steve. Yes,
Chair, and for the questions from the members, I want to start with the attrition and the specific questions around that. Now, the 6.68% relates to 979 people that left our organization last year. And I want to categorize it with dismissals first. and there we had close to 12% of people that's been dismissed. 7 of them was because of incapacity, and then 109 was because of misconduct. Now that can relate to poor work performance, or it can relate to fraud. And with our values being very prominent and integrity, we take a firm stance on that. Also, with regard to the AWOL, we do have clear procedures and policies in place that governs how do we deal with that. And I'm comfortable to say that the systems are working for us, and I think that contributes to our success with regards to absenteeism. Now, our regrettable losses are the ones that we concern, and that relates to our retention policy as well. We've got about 70% of that people that we categorize as regrettable, and that speaks to it's people that we lose with regards to our core competence, our critical skills, and our scarce skills. And when I speak about our retention strategy, I will specifically highlight what we do there. And then 8.59% of the losses were people that went on retirement, and the remaining 10% was people that we feel could leave the organization. Now, with regards to our retention, we follow a strong integrated approach. We look at two things. Every year we do an engagement survey that tells us how engaged our people are. And on exits, we have interviews with the people that informs us why did they leave our organization. On the other hand, we also build a strong employer value proposition to make sure that when people join our organization, they understand why. And so this integrated approach speaks to our pay policy, where we aim to pay our people fairly. We have a robust performance management system where we give challenging work and we reward accordingly. And we also make sure that we develop and grow our people. Then I highlight on the bursary specifically, honorable member. We've got a graduate program that we enhanced last year, and we recruited 207 graduates into our organization as trainees, and we're currently developing them. We're also involved in the Tuduka program, where we invest in chartered accountants in South Africa. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sally. And in very short thing, because we've run out of time, Chairperson, I'm not sure there are about four or five other questions that we need to handle. Should we continue? 1 minute each, yes. 1 minute each. Logan, the cost. Why? Half a second. Thank you, Charlie. The budget allocated for the ATF Interim Secretariat is 769,000. We've spent 225,000, and we will spend a further 300,000 on the launch, and the rest will be towards the first inaugural conference, where we hand over to the official administration that will be elected on the 19th of November. These costs mainly been for the two technical events, the three meetings, conference, printing, and
very quickly on the 960 branches.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, Chair. The question that was raised is around the fact that we want to improve the footprint or increase the number of offices. We have a total of 45 offices countrywide. We are planning to increase that number. This year alone, we want to at least open 3 new offices. So we're in the process of converting the points of presence into permanent presence.
Thank you very much. The call center for those, why are they not working? It's kind of easy to oblivion and so on.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. Call centers in general is never something that can be regarded as a standalone, and I think that often people think that if you have a call center and you've got X amount of people and you can answer the call, that is good enough. It's not about answering the call. It's actually about the quality of the response that is given based on the type of question that is posed to an individual who requires service from that specific call center. And we have embarked on a number of initiatives, which not only just covers the people side of our business, and my colleague, Charlotte Amiyeva, addressed some of the things that we're looking at in terms of developing our people, the type of people we employ, the type of values we require, and we instill in our people. It also includes the areas around technology, strategy, and processes. As such, we have developed some robust technological improvements in the contact center, but what I want to focus on specifically is around the quality, because that's really the question. What we're doing right now is that at this point in time, we have measured that 57% of our responses are the quality response in the contact center. To such an effect, we, in the presentation, we shared with you that we have acquired a knowledge tool that will help us improve the quality of the response, and that knowledge tool is also going to be further enhanced in the next couple of months. It will also allow us the capability of measuring the quality of the response given to the taxpayer. If the inquiry, for example, is referred to a second level because it requires a more technical, more specialist answer, we will be checking that in the background as well with a proper SLA attached, as well as in order to establish whether the person has gone back to the taxpayer or the person has an inquiry and until the time it is finalized and closed with a satisfactory response. So we are putting the processes in place and the support of the system to make sure that we can manage the quality response for banks in our call centers going forward.
Then we'll deal with Mr. Lisa's other question around the generic letters that you sent and how useful are they.
Thank you very much, Honorable Lees. I think we are fully aware that the complexity of the question that you've raised. We have thousands of letters and of different types, and at one stage they were very standardized. Now, it's part of the journey that we're on, but we have already begun to standardize the paragraphs within the letters linked to the type of questions that are being raised, and that can be selected to give a better and more meaningful response. But that hasn't been widely implemented yet, but it is part of the journey that we're on to fundamentally improve the level of the correspondence. That links to what my colleague, Ms. Jacobs, was saying about better information to handle the query. And the final point is our future hope is to connect the people who are involved in solving the issue directly with the people in the organization through an electronic mechanism to be able to put them in touch with one another and deal with the matter directly, as opposed to talking to somebody who is merely representing what somebody else is already doing. But that's also part of the journey. We have to get a lot of the foundations right to make that work.
Thank you very much, Barry. And then if maybe Matt could deal with Honorable Member Zukida's question on the registration.
Thank you, Commissioner. The question was around the process and the numbers that have been reported around registration and deregistration. The numbers that are reported in the annual report give you the net numbers. So in other words, they have taken into account the deregistrations and the new registrations. So that's the net number that you're looking at today.
Thank you very much, Nathan. Last but not least, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Marek asked the questions around what is the lead indicator between CIT and BIT, and Edward will take it.
Thanks, Commissioner, Honorable Chair, members. Eventually, all taxes are affected by the economic crisis, but if you can imagine that the first reaction is consumers who become nervous, who have to contend with the high interest rates and reducing disposable income. So there's a contraction in consumption, and that reflects immediately on our VAT, and hence you'll see last year our VAT was down by almost 13 billion. And you'll see a similar trend in property taxes, in marketable securities taxes, where the share trades and the share values are lower, and then fuel levies. So you'll see, whatever there is consumption, you'll see the impact first. Secondly, because people are spending less, companies import less, and therefore you see the next big effect, which is also immediate, is in customs duties, which was down by more than 8 billion last year. PIT, whilst there is a contraction in the job market, you recall that wage settlements were still significantly higher than we had estimated them, so PIT still sustained itself and it was higher than what we had originally anticipated. The reason why CIT lags serviced is because even though companies are affected immediately in that they're contracting their production capacity and their manufacturing outputs, they pay provisional taxes. So there is a lag between at least 6 to 18 months in the way they pay their taxes. So they pay the first tax after 6 months of actual trading. And then finally, the last bit of taxes are only paid when their assessment is done, and that could be up to 12 months or beyond of the actual trading. So CIT therefore has the longest lead. We will, however, see on the recovery side that in the same way that they lag, they will lead. So we see the real impact of the CIT effective last year only this year.
Was compliant which would be our closing statement, Mr. Chair. The law already provides for certain non-compliant behavior to be criminalized, either through a fine or through some imprisonment. This year we've already have seen 518 people that have successfully been sentenced and imprisoned. For the past financial year. For example, the number of offences that are seen as criminal offences around non-submission of returns, failure to declare income, fraud, and various other evasion measures. With that, Mr. Chair, I want to thank you again for giving us the opportunity to appear before you, and we're sorry that we went a little bit over our time. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Commissioner and Deputy Minister. Clearly, I agree with the Minister, Deputy Minister, that we always have this feeling that we need more time. We can't avoid that. I hope at some point we'll have to find a mechanism that will accord ourselves as a committee and yourself to have ample time to can go into details. Now, what I was going to propose also is that some of the questions and the answers that you've actually provided, you may not have adequately covered what you wanted to say. And therefore, it may also leave an impression, because in here, it's not just the honorable members, we also have members of the public. We also have the media. It may give an impression that you have not adequately responded to the question raised by members of parliament. It is simply because of time constraints, and therefore I'm going to suggest and propose that some of those questions you may need to do a written submission to my office, and then I'll circulate to honorable members that have raised this question. Kunda?
Yes, sorry, I had to attend to a very urgent phone call. But thank you for this opportunity, Chair. In the written question, there was a question I was supposed to ask them, I didn't ask them.
Yeah.
Can they explain to us as well the performance policy within SARS, how they develop their own people in their modeling career policy? We would like to have that, Chair. Thank you.
Good. Deputy Minister.
Yes, Chair, I'm fully supportive of that approach, but I just wanted to check whether we would have to request the committee to identify those that they feel we need to do that,
yeah,
so that we do not just send another annual report.
All right.
You know, and also, if the chairperson could also assist the relevance of those to the annual report, so that when we have other processes, we do not end up conflating with the processes.
Good. I think we'll do that, Deputy Minister. So I also
wanted to make one or two comments, and I hope this will cover what the Honorable Sidla was going to do as a follow-up, because I suppressed your hand. The issue of the border agency. We really appreciate the work of the revenue services up to now. You have done extremely well. But we still believe there's a lot that can be done. There are still gaps in the system, and particularly around this particular matter of customs. Now, when you get a report that says this matter has been attended to at the level of the executive, it's work in progress. We have got no doubt that the executive is as equally concerned about the matters that impact negatively on your ability to maximize revenue collection. But I think it will be quite critical that at some point we know exactly who is driving this process. At some point, SARS was given the responsibility to do the coordination. The last report I got, the previous report, the latest report that I got, it's like there are some changes at the level of government as to where who is supposed to do what. And I haven't seen even resources, definite resources that are allocated to this particular project, and timelines and time frames. I think we should, and if there is a need for the committee to assist in that regard, we are available to really make our own contribution so that we close this gap. The picture is too rosy of what you are able to do, but in the light of this shrinking revenue sources, either personal income taxes, company taxes, because of the current financial and global crisis, it will be important that we look into other areas that could assist and close this gap. Secondly, your disposal strategy on counterfeit goods. It must also be looked into. I mean, we visited the Durban port, and there are these toilets, and they've been there for quite some time. I don't know if I go there tomorrow and not find those toilets from some faraway places. I'm told the disposal mechanism is through auctioneering. Now, you are dealing with syndicated groupings in KZN. You go to an auction, they are the only ones who can bid for these things. And they outbid each other and nothing happens. So you are settled with these things. Now, the question is, at whose cost is this towing and throwing allotted to? And I think it's the taxpayer's money that is being used. So that disposal strategy needs to be probably looked at very, very closely. The last thing that I think we should also look at from your side, probably indicating to us how far we can actually assist as Parliament on these matters, is the educational campaign. You know, I hear what you are saying in terms of deregistration of trust and so on and so forth. But my interaction with civil society is like these matters, as much as they are important, the message is not filtered down. I know you've got your own awareness campaign, but I think you need to step up that campaign.
Having said that, I think the committee would be in a position to can make its own report and recommendations on the things that we think needs to be looked into in terms of improving the services that you provide for South Africans. Indeed, it's a very, very important service. The demands out there are now outstripping the resources of our country. Service delivery issues are becoming a nightmare. And without maximizing our own revenue capabilities, we'll not be able to deal with these challenges. Therefore, we are all equally responsible of making sure that we make our fiscals to work, not to be ungovernable. We will therefore then take a break, and probably we are going to shorten this break. We've had enough eatings and coming in and out. In the next 20 minutes, we should come back. National Treasury must set up so that we've got adequate time or ample time to deal with the issues that the National Treasury report is going to be capturing. Thank you, Honorable Members.